Welcome back to Goonies World, everybody. This is Meanie, also known as Ryan, and I am joined tonight by Goonie, also known as Colin.
Yeah, hi.
And Johnny Farrow, also known as Sean.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Lunacorn, also known as Lynn.
Hello.
And I think we're going to get right back into the sky whaling business.
It's right. We are again playing Sky Whalers of Jupiter from Cosmic Orrery Games. I'll do a short recap. Our heroes have sailed into the tumultuous clouds of Jupiter, seeking the lodestone ship for their patron, Lord Doldivinus of the floating city of Port Hallwark. On the way, they had an encounter with the magnificent, legendary sky whale Blubberella, and wounded her and got a chunk of her precious ambergris. They also tangled with cartilage kites, the fierce predators of the clouds of Jove. And then moving into the cumulus shoals of the Great Western Spiral, Filbert's compass went berserk, and after a long search, they found the mysterious lodestone ship. But pesky salvage monkeys had gotten there first, and they had to be fought off. So, stealing some of their aerial scooters in the process, our heroes did that, and then explored the enigmatic lodestone ship and determined it must be from little-known, far-flung Neptune, because they found a Neptunian corpse and some treasure from a Neptunian expedition to Saturn. Found some precious Saturnian ivory and six bottles of the invigorating elixir of the carbonated fountains of Enceladus. And you found all that in the ship's smashed engine room. But they also, in that engine room, encountered the dreaded Saturnian shift beast. And now they must fight it. And you can only hope you can defeat it and either get the lodestone ship running or figure out how to tow it back to Port Hallwark before this nefarious Captain Michel, who if you have heard is also after the lodestone ship, tracks you down. But before we start, let's just quickly remind our listeners of our characters and give you guys a chance to get back into your voices for a minute. Ryan, starting with you, just a real quick reminder of who you are.
Oh, well, sure, certainly. My name is Filbert Glass, and I am quite... Oh, Filbert Edward Glass. Peg, if you will. I go by all three names at all times because I'm quite posh. And, the poshest person probably that you've ever met in your life. I've got a very posh compass as well, and I dress rather poshly, and I made quite a bit of money, you see, as an adventurer back on Earth, and thought that the sky whaling would be a lovely way to enhance my reputation. So yes, that is me.
That is you. And how about you, Goonie?
All right, one last time. My name is Xavier Barbeau. And I'm a deep atmosphere diver. And I like to have a good cigar in my mouth.
Yeah.
That's right. All you need to know.
Okay. We need to get you some of that nice Venusian tobacco. But anyway, Lynn, tell us about your character before we jump in.
Yes, this evening I will continue playing Dr. Anais Ambercrom. I am an out-of-place zoologist, and I am here to add to the body of my knowledge of creatures. I just thought it would be a great adventure to study things. I've studied millions of creatures on Earth, and now here I am in the solar system, studying more strange and exotic species and making sketches of them as we go.
Well, it's going to be very difficult to make a sketch of the dreaded Saturnian shiftebeest, because when it first jumped out of you, it looked like a great big flower, but with like a squid-like beak, and his body was like a gross undulating feathered serpent, but then it immediately shifted when it leaped towards you into something sort of like a six-legged scaly purple cow with a lion's mane. And then by the time it landed, when it leaped towards you, it looked kind of like this baby flesh pink hairless baboon with crab hands with a little rhino horn jutting out. It's obviously gonna kill you. Again, your surroundings, you're in a broken old engine room. There's like bits and pieces of strewn cables and broken gears lying all over the floor, and there were two huge tanks in here. He was hiding behind one of the tanks. They looked like they could hold, you know, either water or fuel or ballast or something. You don't know. Anyway, that's like the immediate situation. And as usual, players will go first. And I think this time I'm going to start with Dr. Ambercrom. Okay, here you go. You wanted to see the wonders of the solar system. Here is one, the dreaded Saturnian shift beast. What do you do?
Well, I would prefer to, of course, start sketching and making notes, but I think it might be prudent to hit it with my zap gun.
Okay, yes, the zap gun you took from the dead Neptunian. And whack, 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 yes. Zap. This is a classic, like, laser gun, 1950s-style laser gun.
Five.
And you take five guts from the hideous thing. And then what about you, Xavier?
Sacre bleu. I don't know. I'm going to leap in with my rigging knife.
All right. Very bold.
It's the only weapon I have, so I'm going to go in, try to kill it fast. And that is a... what is that, a D6? Yeah.
Yeah, for your rigging knife.
2 points of damage.
All right, everybody, every little bit helps, and the damage, of course, coming off its guts. And then finally, Philbert, what do you do?
Well, I'm trying to think of something clever to do besides just jump in and stab it, but I can't, so I'm going to jump in and stab it with my rigging knife as well.
All right.
Oh, my. 4 6 points.
That is great. Having done 13 worth of guts to this horrible thing so far, it then transmorphs and transmogrifies, and his body turns into this great big clamshell, but with spider legs, and it opens its mouth, and there's a whole bunch of tongues inside the clamshell mouth, and they all come whipping out at you, smacking about, hitting all of you. Each of you take 6 points of damage immediately from the hideous Saturnian shift beast, all of you. It attacks all of you at once, because we're not playing Merkburg.
All right,
and then
quite a hit.
Quite a hit. And then what'd you get? Must have rolled high. Anybody take any terrible damage? I wasn't going to. You can roll the D6 that it takes.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said six.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought we all took six. That's
my bad. That's why I was.
Oh. Okay.
We all were confused.
I'll go back and look and make sure I didn't. But, okay.
I take but one, fortunately.
All right, that's good.
I take two.
Okay.
Yeah, I have this reinforced atmosphere suit, which is one armor.
That's right.
So I will take 3 points of damage.
Okay. And do not forget your precious invigorating elixirs, should you need them. Sit all your guts back without the need for a short rest. And suddenly... okay, but it's your turn again. It's, of course, transformed into this great big clamshell-like thing with spider legs. We'll go in the opposite order this time. Philbert, what do you do?
Well, once again with the rigging knife, I suppose. I've got no other ideas. Oh, but a mere one again.
Okay, well 14's nothing to sneeze.
One for me last time, but yeah.
Right. Nothing to sneeze at, though. Every little bit helps. And how about you, Xavier?
Ooh, 6 more damage.
Nice.
There's nice. You guys got up to 20. This thing must be of immense power. How about Dr. Ambercrom?
Zap gun again. 4.
Okay. Still, though, you're obviously wounding it. Little pieces of it are coming off and falling down and oozing back into it. And its body transforms again and becomes, I can only call it like a tree trunk made of nerves with little thorns going off the edge. And the thorns flash all over and stab out at you and hit you. And everybody takes D6 points of damage.
Ooh.
Soaked.
Okay, good, good. No one in trouble yet, right? Yeah. Let me know
not
if you need to.
Into
not
making saves.
Trouble. Yeah, okay.
It's getting bad.
I will be drinking an elixir.
I would hope so. Yeah, this is one of those situations where if you take critical damage, something special happens instead of just lying there and going to die in an hour. So if you do take critical damage, just make sure and let me know. But hopefully you won't have to. Maybe you can put it down this round. And it is now, of course, in this weird nerve tree trunk sort of shape with his little flashing thorns. And Xavier, what do you do?
Well, same thing. Oh,
all right.
One
vicious
damage.
Slash of the knife. Okay, well, one damage. Nevertheless, we're getting way up there. And how about Dr. Ambercrom?
2.
Okay. Oh my goodness, there's so much. And let's see if this can knock it down into critical save territory with Philbert Edward Glass's attack.
Yes, well, I had forgotten that Mr. Glass had procured a bulky scattergun monkeys earlier.
Yes, I forgot
so
about your scattergun.
So he's going to throw his knife to the ground and take a shot with his scattergun.
All right.
48.
And I think you might have got it from
the
those...
Rolled 3.
3. Well, still, that's 30. I think you got it from those Saturnian guys in the very first episode, man. I think it's a Saturnian scattergun.
Oh, maybe that was
yanked
right.
It out of that dude's hands. But
yep.
Suddenly this thing makes... he has to save... Makes a save for critical damage, but he makes his save. Actually makes a save on that. Roll a 6. So he's still up and around, but you could tell now. You know, he's like, peeping red. You've heard it pretty bad. But then it switches again and transmogrifies into this, like, three-headed fat dog with greasy, slimy, green skin, like hairless, fat, three-headed dog with nasty, slimy skin. And it attacks you guys.
You're
everybody
so
take
interesting.
It was so interesting.
I wish you'd stop trying to kill us.
What's really interesting is the D6 damage you now take from is each one of the three dog heads reaches out and takes a bite out of each of you.
Uh-oh.
Fascinating.
But that is going to be critical damage, I'm afraid.
Damage. Well, let us hope that you save for critical damage. Roll against your new slightly lower strength. Or not strength. What they call it in this game again?
Vitality.
Yeah, vitality.
Mm. Vitality, I believe, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Vitality, nimbleness.
And I need to get under it.
Equal
right?
to or yeah. under it. Equal to or under.
Oh, I rolled a 19, which is not equal
no,
to
No, it's
order.
Not. Well, you fall backwards, and you look over, and you see Philbert writhing on the ground in pain for the moment. And, then looks like the rest of you are okay, or at least not at that stage. And Xavier, what do you do when you see this? He like flies backwards, like comic book style, like almost all the way back to the door, and skids across the floor, knocking some of the trash and cables out of the way, kicking his body all around like he's being electrocuted.
I don't want to end up like that. I will drink my elixir.
Okay, you drink your elixir. Suddenly, you get this huge burst, huge buzz. So you just had a bunch of vitamin B12 or something. I don't know. But you feel great. And that's what you're doing. Yeah, you're like Popeye. And that is what happens with you. And then what do you do, Dr. Amber Crom?
I'm going to see if I can shake our friend Philbert awake and get him to drink
one of those
elixirs.
Pour it down his gullet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you rush over to him, and of course, he's all kicking and shaking and everything. It's hard to even get it in his freaking mouth, you know what I mean? But you're able to shove the bottle. Okay, and you start to come too. Your guts come back pretty instantly, right, Philbert? But you can tell something's not right. Something's wrong. It's like churning. First, kind of feel like it's in your stomach, but. Oh, it's going down like a little bit lower into the guts, and then it's crawling back up. There's like something happening in the inside of your body. You feel like your body's trying to change itself. You get the horrible feeling that you have contracted or perhaps been impregnated somehow with a little that you may yourself, in fact, transform into as a turning shift beast. Because you can feel your body starting to try to change and work against you.
That's wonderful news. Now I can study you. I mean, no, that's terrible.
Yeah. Now I will have to kill you all if you turn into shift beasts.
And there's unfortunately a shift beast right in front of you, though, and you're the only one that can attack now because Philbert got knocked way far away and then Dr. Amicron ran up to him. So, Xavier, you are the only one that faces the shift beast as it transforms again into this zebra-striped lizard camel, but with a human face that looks a lot like yours, and it's looking back at you with a quizzical grin. And it bites you with your own face, and you take D6 points of damage.
Okay, okay. All right, nice. I rolled a 1, so I soak it.
Oh, good. Okay, yes, you shrug it off with your thick atmosphere suit. And meanwhile, from range, Philbert, you've just popped back up. You're feeling a bit discombobulated and gross. You know something's wrong with the inside of you, but you still have freedom of action. What do you do?
Well, I feel quite unwell, but nevertheless, I think, I feel as though this thing is my mother. I can't possibly shoot it. I'm kidding. I'm going to shoot it. Ooh, 6.
6. Nice. And blam blam, you know you guys have already got it down. And so it's gotta roll now like a 7 or less. No, I'm sorry, it's gotta roll a 5 or less to even, and it doesn't. It rolls an 8. And so it takes its critical damage and very, very rapidly turns into a giant gooey white blob of sweet fluff, and it turns into a vaguely octopoid like bulbous turnip, and then a slug with a scorpion tail and bat wings, and a beaver with horns on one hopping leg, and then it explodes all over the room. Guts, bits fly everywhere. Everybody's splattered with vile gore. But you have destroyed the Saturnian shift beast.
Mm-hmm. As I have guts running down my face, I'm going to quickly begin scribbling in my notebooks about all the different forms and things that it took.
Okay.
If I had killed it, I would have said, shift happens. It would have been really cool.
Yeah, it would have been a great line. Especially if you said it in an Austrian accent. You know, that's what would... The best one-liners, the best violence one-liners are always best delivered in Austrian accents. But, yeah, you know that something terrible is wrong with you. Small, you know, you don't, Philbert, and you have no idea of knowing how long something might take, or even if you're 100% right, but you do have the terrible feeling that anyone who takes critical damage from the Saturnian shift beast will, in fact, slowly turn into a Saturnian shift beast. So I would hope that you could get back to civilization, to Port Hallwark, to throw yourself on the mercy of the doctors and see if there's anything that could possibly be done for your terrible affliction. You have a feeling it's not going to happen immediately. You've probably got a matter of days or weeks, but you can feel it inside you. It doesn't make you evil, but makes you want to squirm out of your own skin, makes you want to turn inside out.
Makes you want to be something else. It's very disturbing. And,
you just let me know if you want me to end your life now.
Oh, no, I'm keeping all of this to myself. Nobody knows any of this. In fact, I feel fine.
Probably wise.
Well, you look a little under the weather, is all I'm saying. I thought you might want me to end your suffering because you have pale skin and don't look so good.
Well, once the good doctor gave me that elixir, I feel quite fine. I'm sure, you know, it did knock the wind out of me, I won't lie. But I think I'm just fine.
I will take your word for it.
Well, now that you've done that, the lodestone ship seems very quiet. Now, you'll recall in the main room that you first climbed down in, remember the deck was kind of on top of the ship. It was like a bullet or zeppelin-shaped ship, but with a deck up on top and no real airbag to speak of. I mean, the body was all made of this weird metal. And you climbed down into the first compartment, and you know, saw that it had a like a transparent wall from the inside, but just one single chair. And when you sat in the chair, you could kind of see this map of the solar system superimposed on the transparent wall, and that's how you kind of deduced that this thing was from Neptune, because the starting point of this map and the whole orientation is like from Neptune. But if you recall, I don't remember who it was, but one of you sat down in the chair and the whole thing started to like lurch. You got the feeling that like whoever sat in that chair could control this lodestone ship if only, you know, the engines actually worked. So you could tow it back to Port Hallwark. It'll be slow going. This thing's much, much bigger and heavier than your own ship, but that doesn't stop you from towing it. We've all seen the little tugboats towing a great big liner, but that's how it would be, right? You'd be moving slow and potentially vulnerable. However, trying to fix this engine, when you look around a smashed, gore-covered engine room, would certainly take a matter of days. And you wouldn't have to roll. You could eventually figure it out, but it'd be a matter of days just to get it to the point where it could limp back to Port Hallwark. So I'll let you guys cuss and discuss and chew on what you might want to do there.
Perhaps we should begin towing it, and while we are in motion, we can see if we can, you know, one at a time, we can do some work and get it going.
Perhaps... But I know we are going to be vulnerable if we are towing. We'd be too slow to get away if we are ambushed by Captain Michel. But if we sit here and try to fix it, he could arrive at any minute. But yes,
that's
go ahead. We might as well do something while we are this. Trying to fix it. I mean, we might as well get a head start.
I was thinking the same. Yes, because you know, if we start towing it and then begin attempting to repair it, then at least we won't be in the exact same spot we are now. Because if he knows where the location is currently and he's on his way here, if we start moving, even if slowly, we won't be in exactly the place he expects us.
True.
Yes, you're quite intelligent for a non-doctor.
You're quite sassy for a non-man.
Sorry, I couldn't think of anything. But
my sass detector is working overtime.
All right. Well, we'll assume you guys get out some great big... You get out some cables and you run them through the big eye hooks on the front of the lodestone ship's deck. And you hook them to your aerial bark and you get a wind full of sail and you do your best to get it going. And you limp out at just what feels like a snail's pace as you continue to move through the cumulus shoals. And in shifts, you go down and you see what you could do all day long, picking up little pieces, putting them together like jigsaws. You know, wrapping electrical tape around cables. I mean, whatever you guys have got on your own ship to help, I assume you go and do your best, though it's a big job, and it probably was a wise idea, just to get going, you know, at least. But as you move on, far, far in the distance, And that was night, remember, when you did all that in the evening. And the deep purple twilight of Jupiter is beginning to give way to the sort of bruised crimson of daylight as shafts of this ruby light come shining down through the multicolored swirling clouds. And in the distance, oh, if only. Now your Skywhaler's hearts ache as you look off in the distance. There's a great pod of Skywhales, way too far away to give chase, but they're drifting lazily on the winds. And as you look up to starboard, many miles away, and you realize what a rich haul could have been yours. However, you have an equally rich haul that you're taking with you right now. But those Skywhales look quite peaceful without their...
Look in there. They're shoaling behavior. I'd like to document their shoaling behavior. It's so interesting.
You do that. I will pretend like I'm shooting them with harpoons.
Yeah, well, there's certainly nothing you can... Well, nothing I would stop to deal with right now, but, you know, the wildlife of the skies of the wilderness of Jupiter never calmed down completely. And eventually, by the middle part of the afternoon, you guys have slowly dragged yourselves. Now, the distance that it only took you a couple of hours to cover the day before, back to the edges of the cumulus shoals, and the visibility is much greater. You know, there's great big pockets of clear air that aren't completely covered by clouds all over Jupiter. And you come out into what looks like a great amphitheater of clouds. Drifting down below you, you can see their rippling tops and to the sides and even far above you, except for the big ruby rays of sunlight shining down through. And as if someone was purposely lurking at the edges of the cumulus shoals waiting for you to come out, you see the sleek lines of airship that is only slightly larger than yours. You can see written proudly in paint on her bow, the Calypso. And you do recall now that the ship of Captain Michel was called the Calypso. And it was a little bit above you and to port, and it begins diving down, not like kamikaze fast dive, but moving down to intercept you as you slowly make your way out. And you have no big guns on your ship. You do have harpoon guns, though, that could hurt a ship, you know. They can hurt a whale, they can hurt a ship. They're not the best weapon you could have, but it's better than nothing. And as it comes in at you, you can see, though, that they've actually got a static gun mounted on their prow, and they're manning it. They're waiting to get in range. And I can see there's a little dude in a safari, like a white safari suit with an outrageous mustache. And a great big dude with an axe. And then, gosh, probably about a half a dozen piratical-looking fellows swarming around the deck. They're all Earthlings, you know, all drawn from the worst dregs of humanity that Earth has to offer. And you can see these small details as they get closer and closer in. But you certainly have time to rush to the harpoon guns and at least fire some harpoons and see if you can damage their ship at least a little bit. What do you guys want to do?
Yes. I want to poon them.
Okay. All right. Now I'm thinking of 1,000 different puns related to that word.
Or poons.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No. Oh, it was a really bad poon.
Nice.
No. Poonster. No. What
pun? That was my nickname in college. Sorry.
Oh, my God. What pun we're having now? Okay. So, if you would like to do the poon attack, I'm assuming that Xavier runs to the guns and mans his gun, making a harsh poon attack upon the Calypso. Harsh poon.
That sounds like harpoon. That's awesome.
Yeah, well.
It was accidentally awesome.
Accidentally awesome. The Johnny Vero story. Anyway, let's... your harpoon guns do D4 damage to a thing of that size. If you shot at a person, it'd be like D12. And that's the same amount it does to a whale. So you fire it, and you may roll a dice as it...
You're going to get yourself some poutang. And 2 damage.
Okay, you do 2 damage to the hull of the Calypso. And... Anyone else manning the other harpoon gun?
Yes, but I only did one.
Okay, well, you have 3 points of damage to the hull of the Calypso. And then the ship has moved, the Calypso's moved enough that it's a damage for the static gun. And they find there's a great high-pitched white noise burst as a ray of light that within it looks like the static on an old TV set. That's literally how I picture the static gun. It's like a blast of concentrated TV static. And hits your hull and does 2 points of damage. That was on a D6, so that was lucky. It's a pretty significant gun, but does 2 points of damage to your hull.
And how much do we have for the hull?
Yeah. On your hull right now, you have six. You have a yes. You have no. Well, technically, you're supposed to roll a D6 for each. Hey, guess what? I just rolled a six. I was just going to give you a six anyway, and then I rolled one. So you're, right. And the hull is essentially like the guts of your ship. It works the same way. And anyway,
we just took two.
Yeah, you just took two. So it's not insignificant. And oh, you got time to shoot at it one more time before it's in so close, you know, that they're going to obviously try to board you. In fact, they're not actually even moving in to try to board you. They're moving in to try to board the Lodestone ship. You know, it's got that great open deck. You're dragging it right behind you. That's where they're headed. But you got time to shoot each one with the harpoon gun. Shoot each of the harpoon guns one more time before it's too close. So you slot in another harpoon and take fire. You've already done three. Ooh, to their hole.
Four more.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That's great. So, what about you?
Three more.
Okay, well, you've actually, with that final shot, you really do some serious damage to their ship. In fact, it takes critical damage. And you've actually done three in excess of their hull damage. So they're actually going to be sinking. They've lost buoyancy. They start to drop lower. But, you know, these guys, they're so close already, like I said. They end up firing a few harpoon guns over and at least attaching themselves by rope to the deck of the Lodestone ship. And then, probably should make them roll for this, but I love the visual of a few guys running across the ropes, right, trying to secure the Lodestone ship. It's from behind you. It's close enough you guys could just run and jump over to it if you wanted to go fight them, but you could shoot them from here. But they're going to have... This is do or die for them now, though. Their ship's going down. They're either taking yours or they're going to die here. So it's gotten very desperate. And in fact, they're going to probably have to, you know, unloose... Well, why tell you what they need to do? I'll think about what they need to do. Right now, we'll worry about what you guys want to do. So to paint the mental picture, you're dragging the Lodestone ship behind you. They just whizzed down and just passed you and fired at the deck. And now their ship's sinking from the damage it's done to you, but they've fired like 6 or 8 ropes onto the Lodestone ship, and some of them are starting to rush over and board it. You can see all this. You're not in melee range. You're at gun range from them right now. And Filbert Glass, since you have that extra urge inside you that's just driving you a little more, making you, giving you a slight bit more energy, maybe. I don't know. I just don't want to forget that there's something wrong with you now. But what do you do?
Well, actually, what Filbert has been doing this entire time, because he, you know, wasn't, he was kind of, both the guns were occupied. So, you know, both they were taking shots and everything. What he was trying to do, to whatever extent this is possible, is, I don't know how to explain it, sort of give in to that.
Oh, yeah, I see.
To whatever extent that he can, and actually just force himself to become a shift beast so that he can then go attack.
That'd be great.
I
should just make that work, but no, you definitely don't want that. And also, you can't force it. It's got a gestate. It's going to be a couple weeks. You do realize you sit there and strain. There's some comical scenes of you straining and trying to will the Saturnian shift beast seed inside you to to do its work early, but
are you
feel
sure
like you feel like it won't.
Proper place to be grunting and straining like
you,
that.
You seem a little shifty to me.
Well, I was just trying to take a shift. Anyway, in that case. So having done that during the time when they were shooting their harpoon guns and stuff, and having it fail, he is going to shoot his gun at these borders.
Okay. Well, like I say, there's actually a half dozen of the borders, but also you can see the fellow in the in the white safari suit and the outrageous mustache. That must be Captain Michel. And then, of course, he has his henchman behind him, who's just this immense. There's something about this guy. He just looks Russian. This just immense Russian dude carrying a giant axe is obviously his henchman. So you got a few choices of targets. Who do you want to fire at?
I guess go take it to the top if Michel is available.
Yeah, you can certainly see him. And he looks, has a smirk of triumph on his face. So let's see if you can wipe it off.
Well, he has a smirk of 5 damage incoming.
Oh, he falls backwards. Surprise, skids across the deck for a minute. The great big Russian dude jumps in front of him. And Xavier, what do you do?
I'm going to run and leap over onto the lodestone ship. Right. And I'm going to try to start cutting some of those ropes that had come over, least one that I can get to, and start sawing away with my knife to hopefully, stop them from coming over.
Well, you can cut one of them right there and get snapped right off. And Dr. Ambercrumb, what do you do?
I will take a shot with the zap gun. Can I still get to Captain Michel?
Well, the Russian's like purposely blocking your guys' line of sight to him. He's doing what a bodyguard would do. He's trying to get over him with his body. And of course, it's a gigantic Russian body with massive sideburns.
The bodyguard's going to have to take it. He's going to have to take the shot.
Bodyguard growls at you from the distance. 4. Boris. I'm just going to call him Boris. Okay. Yeah, there's only over here, it's just Boris and Captain Michel, and 3 of those guys had run over, but 3 of them are still, on the other ship trying to get out things they need, not valuables per se, but their supplies and whatnot. They know their whole ship's going down. They've obviously been ordered to do that. They may never get that chance if the rest of these other 2 ropes get cut. And then Captain Michel, from cowardly cover, leans out from behind Boris and says, "You may as well surrender, for you may have found the lodestone ship, but it is I, Michel, who will take it from you." And he fires a little gun, and the crack rings out in the Jovian sky, and he hits Xavier for 4 points of damage. And then three of the other ones who get up there fire broadside at the rest of you, and you guys each take D6 of damage from the 3 who have jumped over. We're graciously letting one of those shots go wild. You couldn't get a perfect line of sight.
D6 from the collective 3?
Yeah, really just 2 of them. I mean, you each got shot by those dudes, in other words.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, however, it's your turn. It looks like, frustratingly, it looks like, Captain Michel's going to be a coward and he's going to hide behind Boris so you guys can never get direct shots on him. Duck back right out after it's his turn. You might think of something clever or just run over there and get him. But who wants to go first?
I will go first because I know that this thing is happening to me, and I think there's a little hope of recovery at this point. So he's just going to kamikaze up onto the other ship, Captain Michel. What's it called? I forget.
The Calypso sinking. The lodestone ship is where they are. Oh, you're going to go over to the Calypso? Well, that's
Michelle came over to the Lodestone ship?
Yeah, Michelle and Boris and three fellows are on the Lodestone ship.
Oh,
you guys,
okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Everybody but Colin is on the decks of the Jover. And then you have three more on the decks of the Calypso, desperately trying to get out everything they think they might need and get it transferred over before it sinks.
Okay. Gotcha. I misunderstood. Okay, well, yeah, no, I'm going to go over to the Lodestone ship then, and just kamikaze on Michelle. He's going to shoot at him, I guess. Yeah.
Well, of course, and frustratingly, he's being blocked by Boris, who's giving you that, like, obnoxious Matrix gesture, come fight me gesture, you know, with one hand and swinging his big axe around. Michelle's, you know, hiding behind his great big bulk of his body. He just keeps ducking out to shoot and back behind him. It's really maddening. So you might have to go through Boris to get Michelle.
We might have forgotten. I'll just remind everyone that they had on the Lodestone, there was those little, like, scooter things, and we had them, like, prepped and ready.
You did. You had the aerial scooters all ready to go.
So if we need those, I don't know. They might come in use.
I don't know how handy that'll be.
I mean, if you wanted a kamikaze, you know.
Well, I was just going to... I was imagining that I could, you know, run past Boris or something, but if he's totally just blocking, then I'm going to just grapple him, I guess, and bite him really hard on the face.
Well, if you want to grapple him to, like, immobilize him, then he'll have to make a roll. If you just want to bite him, you can roll the damage, but do you want to throw him out of the way, that type of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah. Okay, he'll make a strength roll. Now, Boris, we'll just double check Boris' strength. He's obviously going to have a big... His vitality is 15, but oh, shit, he rolled an 18. He's heavily hurled. This is like a big wrestling match, right? You're going to throw this big Andre the Giant-sized guy. He thuds down onto the deck of the Lodestone ship. And then Captain Michel is exposed and behind him. And he's still got his little gun and his little white safari suit and his outrageous mustache. He's now exposed to fire from anyone else who wants to shoot at him. And... I think it was your turn. I called on you first. So, Xavier, what do you want to do?
I still don't have any ranged weapons, so I will.
Of course, you could still try to cut. You could cut another. You can cut two more of those things. That ship's gone.
Two more ropes. I think that's worthwhile.
Okay, I think it is too. The second rope that's holding onto it goes. Oh, merde, says Captain Michel. And he's not doing much to honor the French race here tonight, Xavier. So, anyway, what do you do, Dr. Abercrombie? Now, Captain Michel was obnoxiously hiding behind Boris, but Philbert had just hurled Boris to the deck of the ship. What do you do?
Yes, now that Michel is exposed, I shall shoot at him.
Okay. You know, and he's already wounded.
Seven.
Oh, my goodness.
Nice.
Captain Michel must make him a save for... Oh, my God. He just rolled a natural 20 to save for critical damage, which is absolutely bad. And I'm going to have to say that, you hit him with enough force. The zap gun lays right into his torso. His eyes grow wide. He flies backward. The edges of his mustache fly out in the wind, and he slides all the way across the Lodestone deck and right off the edge. And you see falling like a comet down into the deep atmosphere, where Captain Michel will be simultaneously crushed and fried. And however, if you were hoping that everyone would immediately surrender when the boss went down, you were sorely disappointed when Boris, watching his beloved Captain Michel fall, he looks over, tears of rage and hurt in his face. He looks over the closest person, Philbert, and cries. And there must have been deep love between the two men. You can see the pain in his eyes as he pulls himself up on the floor and lunges up at you with that great big double bladed axe. And of course, it's a big, terrible, horrible, bulky D8 weapon. But you know what? I'm going to let you roll that. You do not want what I just rolled.
D8,
you say? Yeah, I just rolled an 8, and I've been letting you guys roll damage, so why would I suddenly...
I rolled a 3.
That's much better than the 8. They're both curvy numbers, but 3 is better. And then the other... There's still 3 men over here. But one of them sees what you're doing now, Philbert. I mean, not Philbert, Xavier. And he rushes over to, like, wrestle you away from the last rope. So make a vitality roll to push him off. Your vitality or less.
Yeah. My vitality is weakened, but I will do my best. I failed.
All right, well, he's, like, grabbing your arm, though. You're trying to go in and cut that third rope. It's all you got to do, but now it's, like, that struggle where he's over there grabbing your arm and trying to pull it, and your faces are inches from each other. You can smell his terrible breath. And then there were 2 other ones, and one of them, they both look like they're going to fire at you, Dr. Abercrombie, but then one of them stops and he makes a polite gesture to the other one, like, you first. And that guy goes in and fires at you. And, oh yeah, go ahead and roll D6 for damage.
2.
Okay. And then the other one fires. Roll D6 damage.
2 again, and I'm going to drink my last elixir.
Okay, smart idea. Now, it could be that maybe they don't surrender just because Captain Michelle goes down, but Boris is an obvious leader type. Maybe if Boris goes down, these guys start talking about surrender. Who knows? But here they are, and I do not know if Philbert got to go in that turn or not. He threw down. You, it's your turn to go, Philbert. You get to attack before Boris attacks again.
Well, I will attempt to shoot him, yes. But I roll a 2.
Okay, now Boris has already been wounded, so... And every little increment is good in this system. Let's fight some huge monster. But, for example, you guys have done 6 guts to Boris already. And what about you, Xavier? You want to try to shove this guy off of you? Because now you're the acting one. Now he has to make the strength roll because it's your turn and you're the one acting. You don't have to do anything. He's got to make the vitality roll. And he rolls a 17. So you shove him off of you and he falls across the deck. Do you want to cut the final rope?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And snap! It goes. And that guy who you shove goes, no! And he runs over to the edge and watches helplessly, forgetting the fight for a moment. And you see the 3 guys who are packing on the Calypso. They're like, no, no, waving their hands up as they just slowly begin to sink, you know, 10 feet down, 20 feet down, 30 feet down. Oh, no. They're wishing they grabbed those aerial scooters when they had the chance. And you know that it'll be a long time. Yeah, you won't get to see it, but they'll go down to that deep atmosphere and the Calypso and everything on it will be crushed and fried simultaneously with the terrible pressures of the great depths because they lack a deep diving suit like Xavier's. And then you still have big Boris right there, but what do you do, Dr. Abercrombie?
I do believe I will be shooting big Boris.
Okay. And of course there are the other 2 pirates who had shot at you, but they look like they might crumble if Boris goes down.
7
to Boris. Okay, that's a total of 13 to Boris. Boris is now going to go to his vitality. His vitality's knocked down by 3, so he's got to roll a 13 or less. Oh, my God. You see? Well, it looks like a 20. I'm trying to hold up the 14 that I rolled. One more than he needed. And he looked like he was just about to swing his axe at Philbert, but bam! And from the zap gun, gets a zap to the side of the face, and he falls, slumps over on the deck, and he's taking critical damage. If anyone would like to give him the old coup de grace right now, they can do it. But
that is the proper French pronunciation.
Coup de grace.
Yes.
Yes, your French is very good.
We've been saying that in our gaming group, you know, for 20 years now. We joke. We always say coup de grace. But and of course, as some listeners will know, that is a supervillainous name as well that we've adopted. But the point is, the other two guys immediately throw themselves at your mercy. They throw their weapons down and they do the full on kowtow, right? Like all the way, bowing down, heads on the deck. Please, 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 we surrender, we surrender. We'll work for you. We'll work for free, says another one. Yes, I will work for free. In fact, I'll pay you to work for... Yeah, me too. I'll pay you to work for you. Please, just don't throw us off. Don't throw us off. Don't make us walk the plank. Stop giving them ideas, says... And do you guys want to let them live, or do you want to consign them to their... to be crushed and fried?
Don't know.
I think it would at least be prudent to tie them up if we cannot make a decision with haste.
Yeah, I am not a cruel person. I don't think we need to make them walk the plank if we don't need to.
Okay. Well, we'll assume you guys tie them up. And you make the slow, uneventful journey back to Port Hallwark. And when you get to that magnificent floating city, you see all as many walkways and spires. People are gaping as they look out from the balconies and windows and railings and ramps as you guys come pulling in this massive alien lodestone ship all the way to the dock at the manor, well, the tower top manor house of Lord Doldavinus, your employer. And he's already out there on the landing deck with his, remember, he's got his little Martian boy in a turban and his Sirens of Titan girlfriends that are all oozing around him, their weird blue rubbery bodies. He's still got his robe on and a drink in his hand. Marvelous. Oh, just look at it. It's more magnificent than I ever had imagined. Oh, I do say, this is not of normal origin, is it? Have you determined the origin of the lodestone ship by any chance?
I think we found some clues that of maybe it might be a Neptunian origin.
Oh, Neptune. Well, the very fringes of the solar system, a world cloaked in mystery. And they say it has great rings of its own, although we cannot see them in our telescopes. Occasionally they have had some inkling of that through the spectroscopy. Fascinating, fascinating to know that that world is inhabited. In fact, I have heard some rumors about those ice fields as well. Yes, indeed. Oh, sir.
We have here some biologics on the board as well you can procure.
Yes,
the body
yes.
was found, the possible
oh, yes.
Neptunian.
And some treasure, I assume, as well. And his servants are like running in and getting everything settled. Don't worry, we will, of course, stick to our arrangement. You may keep what you find, and oh, you found a lovely piece of ambergris there. I do hope this gets you close to being out of debt. I'm sorry, Mr. Glass, I did not mean to stare, but sir, you have a clammy and pale complexion, and I cannot help you but notice you gritting your teeth occasionally. Do you feel unwell, sir?
Not as such. I've certainly felt better in my time, but I believe I have been blessed with a gift from an alien beast of a type.
Oh, no.
If I may.
Yes?
He has been acting a little shifty. Since he took terrible damage from the creature that we fought.
And what creature was this now? A shifty creature, you say?
It was a Saturnian shift
changing.
Beast.
Yes.
A Saturnian shift beast. And when he says that, all the sirens of Titan that are with him, you know, they're from, you know, Titan's a moon of Saturn. When they hear the word Saturnian ship beast, they all squeal and scream and rush and hide behind him. Now, my pets, don't worry. They defeated the Saturnian ship beast. But one of them, in her little musical sing-song voice, whispers something in his ear. Oh, yes, I see. Oh, no. Oh, yes. Oh, no. Oh, yes. Well. Sir, he says to you, Filbert. Now, my Sirens of Titans here, they tell me that when you are almost killed, brought near death by the Saturnian shift beast, and you, sir, will will become one. You'll become one, but you have a matter of months. There's only one killer, I'm afraid. You must ice a drink with ice cubes from the rings of Saturn itself. Which reminds me, you know, the wilds of Saturn are little explored. Mostly we have just explored their moons. So perhaps, since you were so successful here, I can see my way to underwriting an expedition to the planet Saturn, where you can ice your drink and heal what ails you, and perhaps there are greater things than sky whales in the clouds of Saturn. Shall we go in and have a mint julep and discuss particulars, friends?
Sounds quite intriguing.
Well, if it would get this horrible beast out of me, I was trying to play it as though I was happy about it, but I'm really rather not.
No, who would be? Who would be,
sir? It would be less posh.
Yes, you're a magnificent specimen as it stands now. We would hate to see you defiled. But don't you worry. You'll be in the clouds of Saturn soon enough, enjoying an iced drink from the rings of Saturn. And you will wash that Saturnian. You will take a shift and it will be gone. But let us discuss it over a mint julep, friends. Come right this way. We will get we'll have the banking representatives come here to draw papers and get you out of debt. Congratulations, you've achieved your mission. And that's where we'll go ahead and wrap up our little 3-episode arc of Sky Whalers of Jupiter. A fun little game, like I said. Find it for free out there on itch.io. It's sparse, you know. You want a GM who likes to make up a lot of extra stuff to go in, which is what I did. But this is supposedly just a little placeholder version, a fancy schmancy version. It's supposed to come out someday, so we'll hope that it does. And next time, yeah, we'll be doing something completely and totally different from this, but we're not ready to say what yet. We're going to leave you in suspense.
Yeah, if we do play this game again, I know Xavier... Hopefully, we'll come across Blubberella again, because he's kind of made that his white whale, you know.
Yeah.
He's going to hopefully... If he has to die trying, he'll do so.
All right. Well, maybe we will someday play this again, and maybe not, but we've certainly left it open. And in the meantime, we'll take a week off, as we always do, between little series, and then we'll see you after that.
Hey everybody, if you like our podcast, don't forget to leave us a good rating and or review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Spotify, or wherever you're able. Subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter at Goonies_world, and check out our website at GooniesWorldPodcast.com. Email us at GooniesWorldPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.